Hey, it's Rachel and Christy, and welcome back to Constant Chaos. We are here today with Dr. Sarah Cheyette. She is a pediatric neurologist at the Palo Alto Medical Foundation, and we're really excited to talk to her about medication, everything you need to know. So let's get started. I know the first time we got the diagnosis of ADHD when my son was 4, the doctor looked at me, he's like, I don't say this very often, but for a kid this age, but you're going to want to medicate. And I kind of knew because we'd had a hard time since he was born and it was a clear case. And I'm like, yes, let's try it. But then once we said, let's try it, my husband went back and forth of like, oh, this is really hard. Do we do this? And we researched and we did it. We started the Ritalin. That was our process. And is Ritalin always that entry? And then you kind of branch out and do the other things that we've done since?
Oh, no. People try different things, and different doctors have different things that could be the entry. But you may want to tailor the entry to your particular child. There's lots of different medications, and some are particularly suitable for younger kids. You want to think about how long you want the medicine to last, because that's one major difference. Like, all the medicines are pretty effective, but some of them might last for 2 or 3 hours, some of them last for more like 8 hours. And so thinking about how long you want the medicine to last, and also who wants to have to sit on their child to get the medicine down them in the morning? I don't think anybody does. So you want to find a medicine that is semi-palatable to your child. And these days, you've got tons of ways to get medication into your child. You have pills, you have capsules that could be opened, you have meltaways, you have liquids, you have a patch option too. So, you know.
That's new. I haven't seen a patch.
The patch has actually been around for a while. Okay. It's Ritalin in a patch. Basically, it's called Daytrona. But I think the main issue that you probably had to face as a mom of a 4-year-old, where a doctor was telling you that medication was there for your child's brain, was, do we do this or not? I mean, that, you know, what medicine isn't actually that important? It's do you start it? And a lot of parents really agonize over that decision. It's really
we agonized for a long time, and especially back then we had to do a heart test to make sure that there were no abnormalities.
There are two major kinds of medicines. There are the stimulant medicines, which are the ones that most people think of when they think of ADHD medicines. And those are things like Ritalin and Adderall, Vyvanse and Focalin. And they can increase blood pressure and pulse, but they're actually very safe heart-wise. If a child has a heart condition, you are surely want to get it cleared by the cardiologist to make sure everything is okay. Or if there's a family history where lots of family members have sudden early death from heart problems, then, you know, you probably need a heart test. But most people don't take a heart test. And I can tell you, I'm very careful when I prescribe these things and I send to the cardiologist, you know, not much of any concerns, but the cardiologists rarely, I can think of like 3 patients over the course of 20 years that they said, don't give them this medicine. So, although I totally understand when parents are like, oh my gosh, should I give the medicine? I try to let them know it's not the biggest decision they're ever going to have to make with that kid or in their lives, you know, because the medicines are safe physically. And, you know, you can always stop them if you don't, that these are optional things. Mm-hmm. These are, you know, it's not diabetes where you die without your insulin. This is something where if it helps your life and your kid, more to the point, your kid's life, you can keep giving it to them. And if you don't want to, you don't have to. So it's extremely optional.
So can you talk a little bit about just like the type of client you see? And I want to get down a path of the type of client, you know, the type of kid, the child that comes to you, like age range, like what are those parameters that you typically treat? And then how do you get into this conversation with parents? Because I think you brought something up that's really interesting, which is, you know, there's still in some places and in some people have such a stigma about using medications. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of to your point with the mm-hmm. diabetes, this is just a different thing that needs to be treated in some kids. Some kids probably can learn through behavioral therapy and different modalities, how to calm their brain or how to change things. But some people are just wired in a way that they need a little help. And so can you talk through a little bit about the parameters of who you see and all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I see kids and adults. So my practice basically is kids and teens and younger adults. My husband's a psychiatrist, so he's had people up to like 75 or 80 ask for the stimulant medications. So I can tell you that there is these days a very wide range of ages. 4 is about the youngest that comes in. Although sometimes they'll get even younger, but 4 is about the youngest. And, you know,
we were told it was too young anytime before that. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't tend to medicate the littlest ones because unless there is a safety issue, like they are trying to fly off your roof, you know, they're more manageable and you have more leeway. They can get around and run. You know, there's a lot more leeway that you can have. It's a tiring thing, but I would have to say that most people start coming in after a couple of years of school. So first or second grade would be, especially the boys when they're younger. A lot of people will kind of poo-poo kindergarten issues because they'll say, you know, it's just kindergarten and maybe the teacher wasn't right. They're going to grow out of it, blah, blah, blah. And then after kind of a couple of years go by and they're like, oh, it's not the teacher. And learning starts to be impacted. Then, you know, the ones who are hyperactive are usually in around then. However, the more inattentive ones can cruise for a while. Middle school tends to be kind of a time when they start to get an idea that there may be something going on with the dreamy, inattentive people. Because until about middle school, you can really kind of coast through school especially if you're intelligent and just kind of be there 5% of the time mentally and, you know, get by. Oh, you have a set. Yeah, right. So it's there are different issues. And so you know, in middle school when the grades become obvious in our area, you don't really get grades for elementary school if you're in public elementary school, but you start to get grades in middle school and people are starting to think about high school and then it becomes, you know, another issue. And funnily enough, another kind of crunch time where people come in is right before they leave for college. Sometimes, actually every year, it's like, there's a little slew of phone calls saying, hi, I'm leaving for college in a week. Can you see me? Because I want to get this taken care of now.
Seriously, they were able to get all the way through school. And now they're
worried because they're leaving for college and their parents are not going to be there to kind of pick up the slack.
So does this mean that our parents are out there really helping academically and emotionally and carrying a huge burden for these kids?
Yes. They're the executive function. They're their brain.
Absolutely.
They're all together. Here's your trumpet.
Sometimes it's in an obvious way where parents are totally still managing their high schoolers' homework. But sometimes it's a bit of a less obvious way. You know, those, didn't you say you had a test today? What are you doing here? Or I noticed that the gas was low in the car, or just little, you know, little hints like, doesn't your job start now? Or, you know, getting the kid out of bed. Honestly, right. There are parents who are still doing that when their kids are juniors and seniors. So there's a, you know, or there's this kind of growing realization from the kid, like, okay, this is my life now and I want to get it taken care of. So there's a lot of different reasons why people come in at different ages. Some teenagers have wanted to get it taken care of, but their parents didn't want them to get it taken care of. So when they go to college or whatever, they realize, hey, I can do this now myself. So depending on the reason and the age of the kid, they might come in at different times.
So now, so you get, a family comes in with, let's talk maybe about a younger child, and are they coming in looking for diagnosis, or are they coming into you looking for just medication? I'm sure it's a combination of a lot of things, but can you talk a little to, you know,
yeah,
the most desperate and the most vulnerable? And because, I mean, people are out there, you know, listening and wondering, like, how do I fit into this equation, or looking for validation? And I know it's always nice to hear those stories of like, here could be one of the craziest, but here's what I typically see, and here are the questions to ask yourself.
Absolutely. So, parents usually come in for kind of a combination of both. Is this ADHD? Is there anything else going on? As well as, what can I do about it? So, usually these things go hand in hand. Diagnosis is not the hardest part usually, but sometimes it's important to ferret out what other things can go along with ADHD. So do you have a learning disability issue, like a dyslexia, reading processing, math processing, whatever? I don't do testing for that, but sometimes we decide that that's important. I don't really love the diagnostic criteria that are in the DSM book, which is the handbook of diagnosis that sort of a committee of people came up with and said, if you fit X, Y, and Z, you're ADHD. But what I feel is my role and my job is to help people understand in simple terms what ADHD means, like, what does it mean? And especially if you have a kid in there, I don't want them to be thinking, hey, my brain doesn't work or my brain is different. That's not how I want them to leave the office. The ADHD brain works in many ways, just like everybody else's brain. I tell the kids, you know, you're not that special. I tell my kids that all the time. You're not so special. It's that everybody focuses sometimes. Everybody is not focused sometimes, but they're in the not focused state way too much of the time, which is why they got dragged in to see me. And so we talk about what is the purpose of focusing? You know, what is it? What's in it for them? You know, everyone's telling them do their homework. They're like, why? It's stupid. And half the time it is stupid. Right? Like, we're now all teachers too, and going like, why are we doing this? And being able to see this from a kid's point of view is really important, because like I said, everybody focuses sometimes, everybody's not focused sometimes. One of the things that will swing even the most amazingly ADHD person into focus is if they decide that they want to do something. So kind of paying attention to what they want and helping them figure out how, when they don't want to do something, how do they make themselves do it? That's a key portion of ADHD. And I think you need to understand, you know, sort of what focusing is and what not focusing is to help yourself do that. So we talk about different ways that we can move from unfocused thinking to focused thinking, which is really the key part of it. However, so many times, like, you know, the way the schools and 504s and IEPs are, I got to give them a letter saying you have been diagnosed with ADHD, which sometimes that's all parents need or want. It's kind of my least favorite part of the whole process. So
parents just want the letter and then they're done.
They're done. They're done with me. They need the letter for accommodations. They don't necessarily want any sort of medication or anything else. They just want something for the school.
And so for that specific example,
yes,
what do you put that child / family through to qualify for that?
So what I would put them through is kind of more of a, it's basically a history taking. So, you know, one of the things with ADHD is it has to be around for a while. The DSM is like 6 months or something. I think that's really way too short, but this has to be kind of how the person is at a core.
Like, I remember doctors telling us early on, it needs to show up in like three different places.
It's, yeah,
I think my kid's off a little bit, or I think my kid's not as focused as they should be. Or,
right. So again, that gets into understanding that every one of us with a working brain will be focused sometimes and not focused sometimes. So ADHD has to be pretty pervasive. You don't just have ADHD for math class or for, you know, this teacher or for mom and not dad or something. You know what I mean? So, you know, trying to figure out if it's ADHD, really the core thing is if it's pervasive. There are also, you know, certain things that are in the DSM, you have to fit six criteria or five, depending on your age. You know, you have to have disorganization issues, losing things, silly mistakes, procrastination. So in the history taking, we talk about, you know, what is life like? You know, can this person get themselves ready for school? What do they do when there's a big project? Do you make a lot of silly mistakes on tests? Do you rush through things? Sometimes, you know, tests or homework are done in 2 seconds because the person rushes through them, right? But other times, everything takes 10 times as long because they, first of all, it's hard to even get started. And second of all, with lots of distractions, you know, everything takes longer. So
yep, my other one.
Yeah, there you go. You can average them out, you know, put them in a blender and frappe, right? So,
student assignment in our house, mm-hmm. I see the behavior characteristics get almost comical. You want to be just like this little fly on the wall. Someone gets in the shower. All of a sudden, someone remembered to brush their teeth.
So yeah.
Like, oh, wait a minute. That thing outside, I'll be right back. I'm like, where did everybody go? It's not hard.
Right, right.
My older son is always, has the dog been fed? Yes, you fed him 3 times already.
Remember again.
Yeah, but more is better. The dog loves your son.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I need to make my bed. You never make your bed.
Yeah. You know, people come up with the most amazing ways to procrastinate, right? It's incredible. Incredible. So, but you know, trying to see it from their perspective, their brain is seeing lots and lots of different things, and their brain is having a hard time prioritizing one thing over the other things. So, you know, without one thing that's clearly important, their brain might hop from thing to thing to thing, and this leads to that, and that leads to this, and it's just a skill that they need to learn to sort of understand what's happening, take a pause, and then try to work on procrastinating. Try to work on prioritizing, the other P word that gets to be important here.
So we've talked a little bit about the attentive and the non-attentive type. Can you go back? Can we go back to the medicine on if you have the inattentive type, what are the categories of medicine, and what do you typically see working the best, or you know, maybe just a typical prognosis of what you would give, and the other side?
Yeah. So basically, one of the main reasons that inattentive and hyperactive are the same thing, basically, in terms of they're all called ADHD now, is that all the medicines work on both kinds. So having both, you know, one kind or the other, and some people have a mixture of both, doesn't tell me what medicine to choose. The way that we talk about medications is kind of more practical than anything else. The first major division would be, do you do the stimulant medicines or the non-stimulants? I mentioned the stimulant medicines, which were Ritalin, Adderall, Vyvanse, and Focalin, although some of them have different names. So Concerta, for example, is Ritalin. It's one of the long-acting Ritalin forms. The stimulants work for the day, and then the next day they don't work unless you take them again. So
for your body.
Right, exactly. Basically, you can take them on a Monday and they'll work for Monday. And on Tuesday, you can decide whether or not to take them. The non-stimulants, basically, the two most common ones are Strattera and Intuniv, which is also called Guanfacine. And there's another one called Capvay, which is Clonidine. But these are different in that they're a little bit more like antidepressants. You have to take them for a while until they begin to work and they build up in your system and they're there 24/7. So for some people, that's a good thing. But I would say about 95% of people who choose medication for their ADHD choose the stimulant medications.
Why is that?
Overall, they work better. Like, if I had to pick one to take to the desert island and fix ADHD, I'd pick a stimulant medicine.
There's two different kinds of the stimulants too. Like, there's methylphenidates, which are the Ritalins, and then there's the amphetamines. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could basically break down those four different sort of categories into two. There's Ritalin and Focalin are kind of related to each other. And those are methylphenidate. Methylphenidate is not an amphetamine. It's actually a little bit more chemically related to cocaine, but it's not cocaine, okay? Yeah, what can I say? It's 11. Methylphenidate is basically two mirror image molecules, and that's what Ritalin is. The Focalin people took one of those molecules, and of course they say that it does all the good and none of the bad, but that's not so. So there's Ritalin and Focalin are more chemically related to each other, and Adderall and Vyvanse are similarly related to each other. Adderall is a mixture of different molecules, again, rotated different ways, and mixed amphetamine salts. And the Vyvanse people took the ones that are rotated to the right, added something that makes it a little longer acting, and that's what Vyvanse is. But the point is that we don't have any way to predict which one is the right one for your kid or for you. There is no way to know which one is going to work the best. So it is trial and error. I mean, there was one company, or maybe there was more than one company, but one that I know of, that tried to give you a genetic test that told you which is the right medicine for you. But it wasn't very good. And here's why. These medicines are metabolized in your system by lots of different enzymes. Like, you know, who knows how many? I don't think anybody really knows, but lots. And the genetic test would measure like one of those and try to predict how you would respond to the medication. And it just didn't work. And I don't believe that test is still offered, but it wasn't helpful. So, you know, there are differences in the ways the medications are released. So, for example, I mentioned Concerta as one of the different long-acting Ritalins. There are quite a few of them, and they differ not, the active ingredient is the same for all of them, but depending on how they are released, they may be a mixture of different effectiveness and different side effects for different people. So for example, Concerta is a capsule. It's got a tiny little hole in the capsule. It's got a teeny tiny little sponge in the middle of the capsule with the medicine. And as your stomach fluid goes through the little teeny hole, the sponge expands, pushes out the medicine, and that's Concerta. Wow. Ritalin, I know, right? So you got to swallow Concerta, folks. Do not cut it, because that messes the release mechanism. There's Ritalin LA, which is a capsule, and in the capsule there are beads, and each bead has an inner core and an outer core. The outer core is released right away. The inner core takes a few hours to get released. So, for example, Ritalin LA20 is released. It releases the outer core right away, which is like 10 milligrams of short-acting Ritalin, and then it releases another 10 milligrams of Ritalin 4 hours later.
So we've tried in our house a lot of the different types of medications, and one of the questions that our doctor asked us was around, or maybe one of my biggest complaints was around productivity early in the day, like mm-hmm. ability to get up, get dressed, brush your teeth, eat your breakfast, and get out the door on time. And so yep. those questions led to, oh, you need the Ritalin LA.
Right.
Because you need that immediate versus perhaps like a Concerta, which might have different release patterns that aren't as immediate.
Sure. And so how do you figure out if the medicine works? You're looking at the benefits, and you want those to be big. Mm-hmm. You're looking at the side effects, and you want those to be small. And so you're trying to figure out what is the right balance. And like you said, these little practical things can make a big difference in quality of life. So the Concerta, for example, yeah, it releases more in the afternoon than the morning. You could fix that two ways. One is you could take Ritalin LA, or there's also Quillivant, Quillitude, blah, blah, blah. There's so many of them. I mean, there's just yeah. a lot, and they're That's all released
yeah.
differently.
But they're all the same thing. Like, you know, Quillitude, which you mentioned, it's just another form of Ritalin.
Exactly. But for some people, it has less appetite suppression than Concerta or Ritalin LA. So they might love Quillitue or Quillivant, depending. And they might hate the other ones. So, you know, there's a lot of things. So with the Concerta, some people will take a short-acting Ritalin along with the Concerta in the morning, and they get a little bit more bang in the morning that way. And then the long-acting kind of lingers, so to speak.
We've also talked about the reverse, where it's like you come home from school in the afternoon and you need to do some homework, but you still need to go to bed. We call them the booster pill. You need a booster pill if you've got something big to study for, or you know, really need to hunker down and focus, and it's going to be particularly hard today.
Right. So all of these medicines have short-acting and long-acting versions of them. And so, for example, you could take a long-acting Adderall or long-acting Ritalin in the morning, but it may not last long enough. You don't want to take another long-acting one because then it would last too long. Some people will take a shorter booster pill. But some people metabolize these medicines crazy quick. You know how some people can drink so much alcohol and remain standing, and other people can like have one little drink and be red in the face and dizzy. Yes. You know, it's just very different. I've had people metabolize Adderall XR. They tell me the effect is gone in 2 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's supposed to last 10 or 12. So
I feel like that's my son. Like, I feel like he goes, his medicine kicks in, and then it's like it goes through his body really quickly.
Yeah. And it has nothing to do with whether you're fat or thin or anything like that. You know, it's harder to predict because it's enzymes in your body and your brain. And if you're seeing that, it's probably real. It's not anything people imagine, I don't think. It's just the way your son is. The Adderall people, the company that makes Adderall, then came out with one called Mydeus. Remember how we talked about the double acting Ritalin, where there's the inner core and the outer core, the Ritalin LA? That's how Adderall XR works too. That's got the inner and the outer core. But Mydeus has a third one. So it releases three times during the day. It's super long acting. The most recent addition to the medication is a medication you take at night called Jornay. And it releases the medicine in the morning. So it's sort of like you take it at night, and the idea is that the medicine is released in the morning and ready to go for that morning routine.
Can you set a clock on that?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't want it to be released too early. I think probably that medicine might be the best if you're having trouble falling asleep. But that's a new medicine, and we're just sort of starting to deal with that. But do you know what is one of the biggest factors in which medicine you're on? Whether your insurance company pays for medicine A, B, or C.
Conversation.
Oh my gosh, you can't have a conversation with medicine without mentioning that, right?
Exactly. Now we were on, I think, Quillivant for a long time, and that was one that just worked for us. It worked because we could do the liquid.
Yep.
You could really dose it correctly.
Yep, you can get it to the drop with the liquid medicine.
Yeah, versus a lot of the pills, like we were, you know, had, I can't remember what pill, we had to like separate it and do the beads and try to make sure it was half, and then that was so hard.
Oh my gosh, what a nightmare.
So we did the Quillivant, which was great, worked much better, but it was so expensive, the insurance didn't cover it.
Yeah, that's hundreds of dollars probably out of your pocket every month.
But it worked. So we had this conversation every month of like, this works so well, yet it's so expensive.
Yeah, which is, you know, terrible. And it's hard to predict, like from a doctor's perspective, I don't know what your insurance company is going to cover. There are the weirdest little things. Like sometimes they cover brand name Adderall, but not generic. Usually it's the other way around. Basically, the newer medicines usually have the worst coverage, but sometimes they're not so bad, and sometimes there are coupons. Basically, I would advise your listeners that, I think almost, it's pretty rare that any of my patients wind up paying hundreds of dollars a month. Like we can kind of
work around somehow, right?
Yeah, there's got to be some sort of workaround usually. And So, you know, there are coupons available online that sometimes help, but it's rare that that's the only possibility. Sometimes you've got to get creative, but I just think that it's such a shame to spend that much money, although I totally understand it. If it makes your life better, it's sort of like the bliss tax, right? So, but it galls me if you're paying all this money for insurance and it's not covering what you need.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully you have the right doctor, right? Like, so that people are listening, like a lot of times, if you have the right doctor and they understand this whole dance with the insurance company and the pharmacy and whatnot, you know, you can kind of figure out a crazy way to write the prescription or,
yeah,
you know, we've dealt with some of those, or that, like you mentioned, the coupon codes that the pharmacies will give you and have, or you just figure out like, this might not be the one that we're going to be able to use right now. It's just, yeah, what it is. So work around it.
You have to work around it, but you also want to get a doctor who understands that all Ritalins or all Adderalls are not created equal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I mean, I think even the manufacturers can have differences, right? Like, I've had people ask me before, like, who manufactured that specific,
yes,
like, a lot, especially with the generic ones, like, who's the manufacturer on that one? And that could even have a difference in its release or its coating or its ability to split or whatever the case is.
Yeah, so because people can be very sensitive, sometimes the manufacturer makes a difference for them. Now, I'm going to say that's not the case for most people. Most people, if they're on version A of Adderall XR, then manufacturer B will be just fine for them. So that's not the case mostly, but that is the case for a significant portion of people. And I'm going to also say that I don't think that brand is necessarily always better, but it's just like that's one manufacturer and the other generic is another manufacturer, but there are differences in them, but people wouldn't necessarily like brand more than a different manufacturer. And so because the cost difference can be so huge for brand only, I wouldn't feel pressured to do that. I mean, I would give my own kids generic in a heartbeat. I wouldn't pay hundreds of dollars a month extra for brand thinking that brand is better.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about the big side effects. You know, there's
always a question.
Yeah, there are always tons of side effects to everything, right? But what are the ones that we're really seeing that would get in the way that you should think about?
Yeah. So all medicines can have side effects, you know, things that you don't like about the medicine. They're not M&Ms. They are, you know, medicines that go into your brain and they can have unintended side effects. So the biggest ones that I see, I kind of group into worse sleep, worse appetite, and worse mood. Those are probably the most common ones. And right now I should say we're focusing mainly on the stimulant medicines, but so worse sleep would be a harder time falling asleep. Usually some people would be like a harder time staying asleep. Worse appetite means that there's an appetite suppression. Mm-hmm. So people are not that hungry for lunch. It's really important for people to have a good breakfast because they may not eat lunch and then they will get hangry at the end of the day.
Right.
So awful. Oh my gosh. You know, you just feel like you need to hide them away for a while. But yeah, it's important. With appetite suppression for lunch, you probably want to give a high calorie per bite foods. So lunch is not the time for the carrot sticks. It's the time for the nuts and cheeses and stuff like that. Something that's kind of sustaining because they may not eat a lot of bites of food. I mean, I don't know, you know, kids not on medicine, they're too busy to eat lunch half the time anyways. And kids on medicine, it's just sort of magnified. Right. So worse sleep, worse appetite, worse mood is always a possibility. I hope that I'm making your kids' moods better or your moods better if you're an adult. But, you know, I want you to be more confident. I want you to be less worried about things. I don't want you to be depressed about, you know, being behind all the time. So I'm hoping your moods get better, but I can always see worse moods on these medicines. So worse mood, fill in the bad word, sadder, madder, you know, more worried about things, whatever it is, that can happen. If it does happen, I would have to say that's the side effect that I hate the most. You know, stop the medicine. We'll try something else. You don't have to do that.
But sometimes that can happen. The mood can happen as they come off the medication.
And yes.
We've seen like where one of our kids is when it comes off like in the afternoon, he's super hungry, 3 burritos, and you know, needs multiple, he's eating, and then his mood is just, he's awful. It's just,
yeah. So some of that may be hangry, right? If they're not eating, sometimes that's like just no blood sugar. But sometimes the way the medicines leave your system for reasons I cannot really explain very well, but I can tell you that they will have this like half hour or hour period of nasty.
Yep.
And one of the ways that I can get around that is sometimes by adding a little tiny short acting booster a little bit before that's expected. So if there's like, you could call it a drop off of your long acting medicine, softening the way the medicine leaves your body by, you know, using a tiny little amount of a long acting pill can sometimes be helpful, or trying a different medicine.
Got it.
Okay, so can we switch now to the other side of the medicine equation?
Sure. The non-stimulant medicines, right? Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. So it is nice to have all sorts of options, because sometimes you can't find the right stimulant for a person, or they have some medical condition like high blood pressure or whatever that you don't really want to add a stimulant to. And some people like the idea of the 24/7 coverage. So Christy, you mentioned like having medicine in your system for the morning routine. The morning routine can be really awful for people. It's, you know, before their medicine kicks in and everybody's trying to get out the door, get to school on time, get to work on time. And there's all this frustration because it happens every morning, right? It's like, can we get this right yet? So, so tempers can flare. So for some people, it is good to have medicine in their system 24/7. The medicines have different side effects. So Strattera, I would say, can make people more sleepy rather than less sleepy. Instead of appetite suppression, I see more nausea with Strattera. So you can still have the not eating thing, but a different kind of feeling. It's not so much, I'm not hungry, but it's more bleh, nausea. Yeah. And you know, Strattera can give worse moods too, the same kinds of things. I would say more anger on Strattera than worry. But, you know, who wants to deal with anger? That's for sure. Intuniv and Capvay are also non-stimulant medicines. Interestingly, these medicines used to be blood pressure medicines. Not very great ones, but they came to ADHD having been repurposed. I would say they can make people feel a little more calm. I think they're more effective for people with impulsive behavior and kind of less effective for the actual focusing part. I would say Strattera is a better non-stimulant for the focusing part. And those side effects of Intuniv and Capvay are probably you know, fairly limited to feeling more tired or dizzy, kind of low blood pressure kinds of symptoms. So, you know, there's a lot of choices to be made when you start thinking about medications.
So do you take, if some of the side effects are sleepiness, do you take those at night or do you take them in the morning? Where do you
have
that form?
Yeah, they're the these are 24 in your system 24/7. So theoretically, it shouldn't really matter because they're supposed to be sort of the same level all the time. I will have people play around with morning versus afternoon on a medical basis. I don't care. Get it in your system the time it works best for you. But some people have done better with them in the morning and other people have done better with them in the evening.
And these are the ones that you said you can't just stop, whereas the stimulants, you can just stop. It's a day. These are the ones that if you were to stop, you need to taper off and consult with your doctor.
You can pretty much stop these, but basically they take a while to build up and be more effective. So you're supposed to take them every day. You're supposed to kind of commit to that to make them work the best. Okay. The stimulants are just zip in, zip out. So they are your medicine of the day.
How long would you take it for until you could see a change? So if somebody started Strattera or Guanfacine,
and yeah,
how long would it take to build up that you could say, okay, now we can see what it's doing. Maybe we play with dose if it's not where we need it to be.
Yeah. So I would, you know, ballpark this on a 2 to 3 week basis. However, you know, it can be different for different people, partly because like for me, there's no emergency to start these drugs usually. Like, you know, there are some people who, you know, they've been inattentive for years. And so starting with a very low dose and having fewer side effects is important for me. So it might take my patients a little longer to get up in terms of an effective dose because I would start low on the dose. So, you know, there's different doses for different people. Some of these medicines are interesting because I have big, big guys taking little tiny doses and they're okay. And I have
back here the way they metabolize it, right?
Yeah, it's not so much weight based like an antibiotic.
Right. So interesting.
Yeah, I have little guys taking like unbelievable amounts sometimes too. So, you know, it can go either way.
And then they all can be combined together in different ways, right? And with other medications, like there's no perfect. It's not like you're going to hit one and that's going to be your miracle. Sometimes you might need a cocktail of things.
Well, sometimes you have one and it's your miracle. Most of my patients are on one medicine rather than a cocktail of things. But yes, you can have a non-stimulant and stimulant combination.
And that could be effective regardless of whether you're ADHD, hyperactive, or inattentive.
Sure. And some people will also be on things like antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications. So don't forget that your mood can influence your focus quite a bit.
Oh, that's a really interesting point. Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem.
That was one of my questions when you were talking earlier. So a lot of these ADHD kids also have extreme anxiety.
Yes.
And so how does the medication work when you're giving them a stimulant, right? Which you would think theoretically would make you more hyper or anxious, but it doesn't. And how do you deal with that anxiety component?
So let's back up for a second and talk about how anxiety affects focus. When you're anxious or sad, either one or both, when you're anxious and sad, it can make your focus worse, right? Like picture times in your life where you're super worried, you know, you can't think straight when you're worried. There's actually a physical connection in your brain that when you're like panicking or worried or otherwise emotional, it turns off the rational thinking part of your brain. I think that's back from the time of like saber-toothed tigers. You don't want to be like, I wonder if that's a saber-toothed tiger. You know, your panic part of your brain turns on and makes you run. So the point is when you're emotional, sad, angry, worried, it turns off the focus part of your brain. And then guess what? When the focus part of your brain is turned off, your life starts to be falling apart. And then you get more sad and you get more anxious and you get more worried and, you know, it's worse. So you really have a negative feedback cycle there. And so the point is that worry can mimic or worsen inattentiveness. So sometimes it's hard to know if a person is not focusing because of worry, and or if a person is worried because they can't focus. So, you know, sometimes, you know, a lot of times it's probably both. You just kind of have to pick something to treat and hope that's the right thing. But I will say that I think that although the stimulant medicines can make some people feel more edgy and, you know, think of times in your life when you're like over caffeinated, you mostly have a chance of making people's worry better because they feel more on top of things. They feel more focused. They're not always feeling behind. So you have to be prepared for any potential side effect. However, the hope is that it makes the worry better.
Right. So this is such a hard job for you.
Oh, you know, it's different. Like, I think I would go nuts if I was a doctor that had a more straightforward set of things to deal with. Like, I think, you know, if you have liver problem, you know, here's what we do. We do these labs, we do the biopsy, blah, blah, blah. There's all these very agreed upon things to do. They would go nuts in my job and I would go nuts in their job. So hopefully everyone's doing the thing that they were meant to do. I'm used to this, but every so often I have to step back and see it from, you know, a parent's point of view and kind of go like, yeah, she doesn't know what she's doing. Like, she doesn't know the right thing to do. You know what I mean? Like, there is no rule book or playbook. It really is a part where you have to have a doctor who listens to you to understand what the point of the medicine is for you and for your kid, and understands that, yes, you're probably not imagining side effects and that they can be really a problem for taking this optional medicine. Like, people are not going to take the medicine if the side effects are really turning them off. There's no reason for them to do that.
You brought up a really good point I just want to address, and I know we should be wrapping up in a couple of minutes, but I think part of this is for the parents to really have to pay attention to what is going on with the child and work with the doctor. Because I know every time we talk to our doctor, he's like, so what time are you seeing the problem? When is this happening? Because you can only do as well in changing up that cocktail and what is being given to the child if you know what's happening and at what times.
Exactly. And so, you know, if you tell me my child has a bad mood on this medicine, then I have to find out, are they eating okay? Are they sleeping okay? Because
And what time does the mood happen? When is
exactly,
it?
Exactly.
5 o'clock? Is it
just? Is it that wear off thing? I can fix that. If it's all day, we got problems on this medicine. You know what I mean? Maybe the dose is too high or something like that. And like I said, with all these individual factors, then, you know, it really can be, hard to know what's the right one. So maybe I didn't pick the right one, but because people can be super sensitive, maybe it's just a tiny tweak, or maybe we are just not in the ballpark here.
Well, thank you so much. This has been, I've been taking notes the whole time, so I feel like I've been learning so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's fun to talk with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, the whole medication thing is such a tricky, and, you know, we there's so much we could talk about, but I mean, even the stigma behind it and
there's so much more I could talk about, and that your listeners probably have questions. For example, you know, what about the part where people feel like they're going to get addicted to these medicines, or if taking these medicines will make them get more addicted to other drugs. I mean, there's
especially with the teenagers, like,
right.
There's a lot of banter with parents about, is it better to medicate them and they understand how their body works, and hopefully that distracts.
People have emotional reasons too. I mean, one of the you know, we talked about the fact that there's no rule book for these medicines. So, you know, people's emotions become part of the decision whether to take medicine or not, because you don't have to. And so, you know, whether it's, you know, something that you want for your kid, you have a lot of emotions, and it brings up, you know, some parents are like, maybe it's because I didn't parent well enough, and, you know, all of these other aspects, maybe, and they feel bad about giving medicine sometimes when they shouldn't. Some parents give medicine before they should. So, you know, there's so much to talk about with this, for sure.
I think we'll need a part two.
Part two it is.
Absolutely.
But thank you guys for having me today, for sure.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too.
We want to thank Dr. Sarah Shayette for being on our show today. She is also the author of two books, Winning with ADHD and ADHD and the Focused Mind. So look for those books, and thank you again for listening.